Quiet, please.
You're listening to Birdies and Bogeys, hosted by Jordan Bloxham and Weston Mon, bringing you golf's week in review, recapping your favorite tournaments with professional insight from their perspective. Now, quiet, please. Here's your hosts, Jordan and Weston.
Weston.
Jordan.
What's up?
Top of the morning to you.
Yeah, something like it. It's top of the morning somewhere.
Yeah.
Probably, yeah. In Ireland, it probably would be that about right now.
It's a very early morning in Ireland.
But let's get into it. It was a good week of golf. We'll mention the Puerto Rico Open, but the flagship event was the Arnold Palmer Invitational, which did not disappoint you, which you usually catch up with a lot of highlights. I actually got to watch the last five holes of this, which is a rarity.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've always loved Bay Hill. I've always loved that closing hole. It's like a really tough, birdieable hole. So it's not necessarily tough, but it's dangerous. I mean, that water brings such, intimidation into the closing. And so to me, it's a super exciting finish, and it did not disappoint. It was exciting.
It was an exciting finish, for sure. Kurt Kitayama gets his first win. Bay Hill was playing tough. They actually slowed the greens down the second round because they thought it was supposed to be super windy. So they're like, we need to mitigate that. They were still firm. It still didn't play like easy. And actually the slower greens kind of messed with some guys for sure.
Yeah.
But they're putting, but I mean, it still played great. I mean, it still played tough. Kitayama had a really good day on the second round, and there were some guys that were playing really good, i.e. Justin Thomas, who ended up like kind of going bogey to finish. And then that was kind of the end of his run. What did he even end up after? They're like, oh, he's gonna win, and then he
JT ended it T21.
Yeah, shoots 72-74 to finish.
Well, and to me, like, people can disagree, of course, but if a PGA Tour tournament finishes at under minus, well, not under, but over minus 10, but within that range, even to minus 10, to me, I feel like that was an excellent test of golf for these PGA Tour players.
Yeah.
A lot of people look at these other ones, like, the Phoenix Open or whatever, and they're like, oh yeah, 27 under wins, and that was just so amazing. They're professionals. That's why they're pros. And I'm like, yeah, but that was just a birdie fest.
They set up the course that way because like we discussed, right? And Rory made some comments about, it changing hands. And I'm like, no, you still have to make putts, right? It puts a premium on hitting good shots, not hitting bad shots either, right?
Oh.
Like, you got the tournament winner who made a triple and came back and won because he didn't just do it by not making birdies, right? After his triple, and he does par everything until 17, but he doesn't make any mistakes come right, which he was two under, so he ended up one over going after that triple. So he was playing pretty good golf, right? He was a couple of under going into there. But it's like, then don't make bogeys, Rory, right? You shoot even on the front, and then you birdie three of the first four holes on the back. But then you proceed to go bogey, bogey to kind of shoot yourself out of it. You make, right? 16 is a birdie opportunity. 17 was playing tough. But 18, I mean, yes, if you miss the fairway, it's not going to be easy, but especially if you miss it right, which Kiriyama didn't. He made sure that if he was going to miss the fairway on 18 with the one shot lead, he was not going to miss it right. So he had the chance to come up and make that,
Well, and the way the course was set up, like if you got a birdie, it's because you played that hole amazingly. Yes. And that reminds me of Augusta. Like there is so much danger around that course. There are places you have to miss it if you're going to miss it. But for those guys that get birdies, like if you birdie 18, that was a fantastic drive and a fantastic approach shot. You don't just like randomly get one. Mm-hmm. And that was certainly not going to be the case here at Bay Hill on those closing holes. And that's what I love about 18. Like you have to hit a great freaking drive and you have to hit a great iron and a great putt. And that's how you win tournaments.
Yeah. And like I said, Kiriyama missed it, but he missed it in the right spot where he knew that he could get a club on the ball, move it up around the green. And then he trusted what he could do around that green, knowing he had a one shot lead.
Yeah, the course management on 18 by Kiriyama was like the highlight of the event, to be honest. You miss it where you have to, and he went left, and then that opened up the green to a much larger landing area. You miss it right, and it turns the green super shallow. So it really opens it up, and you need that. And this is why it's such a great designed hole. If you're hitting out of the rough, you don't have the stopping power of a clean shot. So you need that green to roll the ball out. And that's exactly what he did. He landed it on the front and it rolled out another 15 or 20 feet, but it still gave him like a 50 footer, which was literally the best putt of the whole tournament. Because
I still don't know how that thing like, didn't fall.
A lot of times, and I watched this thinking about my days as a kid on the putting green and being like, oh, if I make this putt, I win the Masters, this 18 footer or this 6 footer, whatever. But never did I sit out there and go like, if I can 2-putt this 50 footer, I win this tournament. And like, now I'm like, dang it, I need to go out there and do that now. But it was so impressive. And the fact that it didn't go in was just kind of heartbreaking.
Well, yeah. But how many people do you see? Like that was stress free, you get some people that hit it and that first putt, they don't hit very well.
Yeah. And there's a lot riding on that. Like just get it within 6 feet. Like that's the goal at 50. And, and I saw some really funny memes pop up where he marks his ball and the thing is literally on the edge. And then people were saying like, tag a buddy who would miss this putt for 3.6 million.
Which 3.6 million. So Kiriyama wins that, and he now, let's look at his career, because they were saying before this, he almost doubled. So he went from, he added 3.6 million to his winnings, which took him to 7.8. So he had 4.2 before that.
That's boss.
Yeah, so he gets that. He's been playing really good, right? He's got 2 top tens this year already. This win moves him up 19th in the official golf world rankings, which it is what it is. But he's been playing pretty good and hasn't been quite able to close the deal, but definitely did right after his triple on number 9. He could have folded up shop. I mean, he was still right there, but there are a lot of guys who have made triple will just kind of be like, and just struggle for a couple holes after that, right? Make one or two bogeys in the next 3 or 4 holes after that. Mm-hmm. And then they just end up kind of fading into the distance, but he did not do that. But yeah, it was good. So 3.6, he almost doubles his his thing, and there was a lot of good players, right? He beat a really stacked field. Obviously, it's a elevated event, so that pushes it up the ladder a little bit. But I mean, he goes, beats his next couple of guys are Rory McIlroy, who had it there, Harris English, Patrick Cantlay, Jordan Spieth. Your Jordan Spieth kind of fell apart down the stretch, right? Goes there and bogeys three of his last four holes, or three of his last five holes, to fall out of the lead. Just kind of lost it, which he's done a few times on his kind of, I don't want to say comeback, because I don't think he necessarily fell that far, but on his getting back to closer to where he was before. I put a poll up on my Instagram who was going to win, and it was four guys, and Kitayama got one vote. I think there was like, because I did it right before the tournament, so there wasn't, it was like 25, but it was still like 25 votes, right? Kitayama got one. Cheryl Hatton got, I think, two. Scotty Scheffler got like
all of them.
Cantlay got some other ones, right? But it was definitely not Kitayama who got that, which he doesn't have a win. I don't there, but it just tells you, right? Some of these guys have it, and this was a golf course that punished, you know, bad golf shots.
Oh yeah. No, it was great from that perspective, I think. And you know, to hear Rory kind of go off about it and wanting to see birdies, I was like, Rory, go do that at the Tucson Open. This is Bay Hill, baby.
Well, it drives me nuts that like he's got such a complex about that. That, I mean, he's like, well, it can't be this. And I'm like, well, why can't it be this? Right? Why can't be?
My thing is like, probably why he's not going to win a Masters. Like the pressure, there was a ton of pressure coming down the end there at Bay Hill. And you know, I even heard the announcers when they called it. They were like, the greats make this putt. You know, Rory had a 12-footer to get into the playoff. And I loved it. They're like, and the greats make this putt. And then one of the guys backed it up. And he's like, well, Rory's one of the great ones. And no, he did not make it. I was like, nope, he's not one of the greats.
And like I said, yeah, I love that he didn't make it, but it just, right? Yes, but he's made a lot of great putts in his career. But has he, I don't know that he, like, if I think back on it, I don't know that he's made that iconic putt, though.
Yeah, I don't think he's ever made the putt to win.
Yes, right? Because those,
his major victories were like blowout victories, or he just had to like, he just needed the bogey to win.
Yeah. Where it wasn't there. And it would be interesting to kind of go through that, the thing and go, has he made that putt? He's missed it a lot. I do know that, especially in the last 3 or 4 years.
And that to me is like the greats. Like for one, if you think about the progression of a golf hole, you've got your drive, your approach, possible chip or putt. To me, the pressure affects putting the most. Like your swing is a pretty big motion, and you can, for the most part, autopilot your way down there.
You can fudge that one a little bit.
Yeah, right? You can fudge it. And then the approach shot, you can kind of fudge that one. But when it comes to like making a putt, anytime you make a putt, it's because you putt it perfectly. So that requires a lot. Now there's a lot of variation within what's perfect between line and speed, but you still have to do it just right for what you choose.
Right.
And then you add pressure on top of that, and man, it's to me it's the biggest challenge.
It's just, yeah, it's making a putt, right? It's the hardest thing to do. When there's a little bit of pressure in it, right? When the hands get tight, it just, you don't get that fluid motion, and you don't need to be off by a ton.
Nope. And not only
Miss a
that,
putt.
like you've probably seen those videos out there where the guy has that
Oh, the perfect putter, yeah.
the metal ramp and he's dropping like five balls and only two go in and you're like, "What?" And it's legit. Like there's enough variation in the green.
Yeah, later in the day, like I said, it's off by just a little bit. That's why the guys who make those putts is, right?
Yeah, it's
It's
even more
the greats,
impressive.
yeah.
And it really is the great. So, hey, Rory's fantastic, but again, like I think we had this
Yeah,
discussion. He's to me, he's still not like one of the greats.
and in the fact that we can't look back at any of his wins and be like, oh, that putt, right?
Yeah.
You can look back at a lot of guys, right? And you're like, ooh, that putt, right? And it doesn't have to necessarily be on the 18th green. That helps, but I mean, you can look back at a lot of the guys and they made putts to win. I don't think he's made one. He hasn't made that putt to win.
No, I'm gonna have to agree. I'll look back,
Whether
but
that comes in, I don't know. But moving on to the south of the border, it's a PGA mini tour event. I don't know, PGA mini tour.
wait, they had one?
Yes,
What?
the Puerto Rico Open, which
Yeah.
the 406th ranked golfer, according to OWGR, Nico Echevarria Barria captures his first win. And in that tournament, right, it's great because now he gets a 2-year exemption. Because I think if now if you win these other ones, it gives you a little bit more. But he gets a 2-year exemption on the PGA Tour. And obviously he wasn't fully exempt on the PGA Tour. He got in because of everybody else being gone, playing in Arnold Palmer. But so it gets him that last week, the Monday qualifier. And I put in Richard, but it's Ryan. I don't know why I thought Richard. Richard. But Ryan Gerard finishes at a T11 after his fourth. Was he fourth? Yeah, fourth alone that got him into this week. But he needed a three-way tie for ninth to earn his special membership exemption. So he missed on that by a couple. But Akshay, how do you say his last name? Bhatia?
Bachia, I don't know.
Bhatia, I think it's Bhatia.
Your
He
guess is as good
gained
as mine.
PGA Tour special status, I guess, is what you call when you call it, when you qualify as a non-member with his solo second finish. So after playing a couple tournaments, now he's got some PGA Tour eligibility, which I don't know that it gets him in this week. Don't think it
No,
does.
I think he
Right, because
had
that's
full
already set.
status on the Corn Ferry, so it's just a
Yeah,
nice
well, he
little.
was close. He was, I think he ended up like 26th on the Korn Ferry last year, to just
Super
miss it a
close.
couple of times. But got a couple of starts and took advantage of those. And like I said, I think this kid's gonna be interesting to watch. His story is kind of crazy about how he went and did it. I don't know whether I completely agree with how he did it. But he's playing on the PGA Tour now, and it'll be interesting to watch because he was and has been kind of an all or nothing type of guy.
Yeah,
He's
for
he'll play
sure.
really good, or he's making triples and hitting it out of the mud like he was the week before a little bit with the
Yeah,
Honda.
he definitely keeps things exciting. I'd say he's got a little bit of Phil the Thrill in him.
Yes, lefty Phil. So a little bit of Bubba in him, maybe a better comparison. We'll see how he does. But yeah, that and then the PGA Tour,
Big.
big changes this week in the PGA
Big.
Tour for 2024. They're going, and I don't know how the World Golf Ranking is going to handle this. But they're going to have 11 tournaments next year that are limited field, no cut events.
No cut.
No
Imagine that.
cuts. I guess they're not 54 holes. They're at least still 72. But wasn't that like a big thing? Like that a lot of people are like, oh, no cut. No cut. There's no fear of not making any money. What?
Wait, guaranteed
Now,
money is kind of nice.
the guaranteed money is nice. And the players, I'm sure, made themselves very clear about that subject when they had their players meeting last year with Jay Monahan. Pretty sure
Folks.
they were like, wait a second. Yeah, that works. But that guaranteed money stuff works. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what LIV Golf does to, well, I mean, next thing you know, they are gonna cut it to where we're gonna just play 54 holes. You know, load, what is it? Load management, isn't that what they call it in the NBA?
Yeah.
Where
Well,
you reduce your playing time.
I don't, again, like I'm still so lost at why these changes are happening, occurring, or to the PGA Tour when they felt like their product was superior. And to some extent, I do enjoy a stroke play tournament much more than the team events. So I will lean on the side of a PGA Tour event being more superior in that perspective of entertainment. But like, if it, you know, if they just stuck to their guns, like, why do they need to make these changes? Why do they need to make
Like so
this
drastic.
guaranteed? And
Yeah,
they wouldn't even.
guaranteed money and like where's your competitive spirit gonna come from now? And
It's just like they're
no
changing it.
cuts. Yes, they're making serious changes, which are a direct reflection of the competing tour.
Yeah, and
Which
it's just turned into a circus because now it just makes me want to watch the majors even more.
yeah.
There you go.
And yeah, like I said, I don't think they're gonna stop what they do. But yeah, it's interesting that, and then with some different things, the WGC event, we were looking at the schedule just before we came on, and we're like, man, right, the WGC is gonna be going away completely. They're replacing it with regular tour stops. So basically they stole Greg Norman's idea. Now they're gonna get rid of it because they're gonna have eight of those events that they can keep very, very close to the vest.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, it's
Well, there is something fun in all this. It turns out that LIV Golf will be copying the PGA Tour
yes.
in the
I did
next
see that.
event, where they will create a stadium par three experience around one of the holes. And I saw this and I was like, oh geez, do they need to? And then I really thought about it and I was like, wait a second, this actually works. This
Yeah.
is, if anybody should be doing this, it
It's
should be
a
LIV.
Well, they've already
And
had their commissioner pour, like
it like makes too
giving
much sense.
fans beer
Yeah, walking
from his
around.
suite.
So it's like I feel like there is no better fit for a stadium par three experience than LIV. And even I was growing tiresome of it, this year down for the waste management. So it's
Yes.
like
Oh, it works.
I'm okay. I'm okay.
Like I said,
So.
they're already playing music, so it's already kind of part of that. Like I said, and we talked about this a little bit, and more, I'm like, yeah, it's not really a competing tour. This is why I think after this year, yes, he's doing some things, but like I said, my prediction, and whether I've said it on here enough, I think that Jay Monahan is conveniently going to resign after this year. And a new commissioner will come in and he'll be like, well, that was the old commissioner saying that, but I'm going to work with them. And we want the best players in the world to play in most of our events. So if they can, right? So it'll be interesting to see how that comes about. And it's like, okay, yeah, you can play in these, right? If you're a ranked player in the world, or if you've done this, then you'll be eligible. Or
Yeah, I see it as a perfect, not I don't want to say off event, but like as an event to mix things up. Like to me, man, if the PGA Tour actually adopted this and had the team events, obviously everybody that's supposed to live would be like, wow, what a great idea by the PGA Tour to make a more dynamic golf experience, and we get to watch the best players in the world play on a team of four, and like we would be eating it up, right? And it would be a cool experience. So like to me, like blend the tours, bring them together, it makes the most financial sense.
Like,
And it
how cool would that be? It's like, oh yeah, you can play on this tour, and right, then you get some people, but it's like, okay, you can play. Because they're playing in the off weeks anyway, right? They just have, sounds like they're reducing their requirements. Now you only have to play in this many tournaments a year. You don't have to play in, even though it's a designated event, you are not required to play in it, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, the money and everything's there, but you're giving these guys, you're actually setting it up, which, like I said, it plays more into my conspiracy there. They're starting to set it up where it will align a lot better for some kind of agreement between LIV and PGA Tour.
Yeah.
It's starting to
Yeah.
line up even more and more
It is 'cause
towards that.
I had the PGA Tour actually really wanted to squash LIV, they would have created the exact same stuff and just said, well, here's ours. And if LIV wanted to compete against the PGA Tour, they would have created stroke play events and majors and things like that.
I
I
mean,
thought they would go that route, they
they
never
do
did.
have stroke play events. They're intertwined with the team event.
Yeah, but like the no cut, the that kind of stuff. Where it's not
Right.
like 144 players. So,
This is
but
true.
yeah, just not the same product. But, anyways.
But yeah, like I said, there's some things I think. The designated events, the small field, no cuts. We were talking about this, and it does give some incentives, but it can severely hamstring somebody that doesn't get into them early, right?
Yeah, like if you're struggling that year, it could be a really bad year because you're not going to get to play designated events, and yeah, you just have to be on your game. But like we were talking, the rich are going to get richer in this scenario. So if you're a Justin Thomas, you've literally got nothing to worry about because you can just play the designated events, and you're only going to face four cuts every year, the majors. And the rest, you've got 70 players, the best in the world, obviously going to have to
And
compete. But
elevated points,
yeah.
right? they're going to even elevate them even more, and they're going to keep the regular events at what they are. So if you're not playing good in those off week events early, right, you're going to have to. I mean, one of the stipulations is that you're in the top five in the in-between tournaments, right? Where they're going to try to have two or three in between, not just one where the Honda just got punched in the throat this year, where it was stuffed right in between four. It was the designated sandwich with Honda in the middle, as right. And it wasn't even that. It was like a not even a good bologna sandwich, right? Right. It was wish. It was just a mayonnaise sandwich, just a little bit of flavor, but not much
Yeah.
else in between those four bigger events. But I mean, there's some things that I think will be good, right? And the changes. One thing I is kind of interesting is they're basically going to a calendar year, back to a calendar year thing where the fall tournaments are for, well, you weren't quite good enough to qualify for the tour the whole year, but we're going to have no good players playing in these ones. So you have a chance to get to battle it out for those last 50 or so spots. Because they're going to that, and they're played after the FedEx Cup playoffs. So, right, tour championship's done, and then you've got the fall series that is your chance to get that 70 to 120, or probably 75. I don't know how exactly they're gonna cut it off, but 70 to 75, right, to 125 to try to keep your tour card for the next year. So it'll be interesting to see how next year plays out, because I think there's like 24 events total. Almost half of those are designated events. So if you're not playing good, you're playing a very limited schedule, which is why I don't think they can do the minimum anymore, because they are literally locking some people out of playing enough events because of the designated tournaments. So, like I said, there's some good and some bad. Oh, and they did pull, and just a quick side note, out of the player impact program, they pulled 50 million from that and put it back into the FedEx Cup bonus and the Comcast business tour bonus pool. So, I mean, which is a little bit better, but they're like, well, there were some of our guys who weren't our top 10 guys that were getting money in this PIP. We can't have that. We got to take care of our 10 guys. So
Exactly.
just feeding the top in a little bit more. But if you're playing better, you're going to get the most money. I don't agree. Like, I don't disagree with that. Like I said, I think there's some things that, more than anything, because of what they've said in this past 2 years, that is really kind of aging badly for them. So, oh, moving on, man. Some good things. The USGA announced a developmental program, a youth developmental program, which sorely needed in the United States for sure. Right. One of the only, well, I'll say one of the only golf countries that doesn't have some kind of national program to develop their junior golfers. So good on the USGA. Like I said, it basically, I think they set aside 50 million to identify juniors, create national teams, get them with the best. So basically, to develop their game. And it It will be interesting to see how this is done because it's supposed to be to give everybody a chance regardless of their monetary status. So my question to that is say you have one of the best juniors, or you identify a really, really good junior golfer, but he's also very wealthy. Are you going to say, well, we're not going to put you right, we're not going to develop you in this program because you make your family makes too much money and you can do it on your own? Does that make sense? Like,
Yeah.
because
Well,
if
I
it's
mean,
going to be identifying the best junior golfers, right, eventually, right, that'll
there.
weed forward, and 50 million
Well,
can go a long way.
there's some very unique language in here. And when I read the language, like to me, sufficient would be we have a developmental program for the best junior golfers in the United States. United States is a very all-inclusive country, and whoever happens to be the best will be the best. That's fine, right? But when they talk about the language they use in that, the developmental program, they state we want to have the nation's, best identify and train, develop, fund, and support the nation's most promising junior players, regardless of culture, geographical, or financial background. So I feel like they're probably going to make some exceptions because they felt like they needed to address that. To me, I already know that the United States is a very culturally diverse country. And had you just said, we're going to, support the most promising junior players, that's it. But this isn't golf, right? People are going to say, well, golf's a very expensive sport. Yeah, it is. But there are one examples of great golfers coming from very little means, like Tony Finau, an amazing story. I know what golf course he practiced at, Rose Park.
Yes. It is not a gem by any means.
It is no gem. In
There
fact,
is literally, it is right next to a water treatment facility and it smells
yeah,
like shit.
you gotta hope the wind is blowing the right way that day. But not only that, like soccer. I don't care who you are. If you want to have the best soccer player in the world, guess what? You're going to be putting your kid in club teams, which cost extra. You're going to be putting them in extracurricular tournaments and activities, year-round activities. And we're just talking soccer, right? And guess what? The ones with the most means are going to create the best players, unless they find a way to
Possibly,
make programs.
well, they have programs. They identify the best players.
Yeah.
And there's ways, because I know a lot of people who've done it, right? It's the same thing. If talent is there, then it will be recognized. But it's like the one thing that I've always said is that people are like, oh, golf is so expensive. You know what costs zero money? The practice green. And you know what? If you want to, almost 100% of the golf courses that you go to, you're like, hey, I can't afford a bucket, but can I do some things? And you give me a bucket and I collect all the buckets after, or I collect all the buckets before I help you wash out, clean out some carts for an hour before I hit balls. There's ways to make it happen.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one of my first jobs was picking a driving range at a country club of all places, right? And so, guess what? I got playing privileges on Monday and I got to use the range. And, my parents couldn't afford a country club membership by any stretch of the means. And so I worked and made those things available to me. And it was more than just 1 hour. It was like 4 or 5 hour shifts, 4 or 5 times a
I
week.
mean, you were getting paid at the top of that benefits, but there's plenty of courses that if they see
Oh, yeah.
that right, and if you don't go, if that and some won't, but 99% of them, if the pros see something in you, he sees you out there working on it, he's like, oh, this kid could be good, right? Somebody's going to pick up on that for one of the things, right? Either, you're going to get some of the players there that they're going to start noticing, and it'll happen where you just like say, go in and talk to the pro and say, hey, I don't know this. Is there a way, something that I can do that I can earn free balls to hit balls, or mm-hmm. to go play nine holes?
There's so many facilities available to you, and like there are so many ways to make cost effective golf practice a reality.
And right, there's some things that makes it harder. It's definitely not a right. It's not an easy access sport by any means, right? You can't just go to the park and do it. Mm-hmm. But like I said, I don't think I've ever seen anybody, unless you're being a total jerk off, getting kicked off of a course for just putting and chipping.
Yeah. Right? No, you can spend hours at a course putting and chipping and nobody will say a word. So
yeah. And like I said, and this does need to happen. It is definitely a good thing, and it will allow for some of those really good golfers that maybe don't have the means to travel, right? They're playing in a lot of other things, and right, they're doing what they can, whether it's through their high school team, or you can see some, different things within that. But so it will identify some of those players, but it's the same in like football, right? In football, and those, there's again, talent's going to rise to the top. It's, yeah. One of the things that's held golf back is it's been dubbed a rich white man sport, right? And it wasn't cool enough, right? It wasn't as cool as basketball. It wasn't as cool as football. It wasn't as cool as, some of these other sports, right? But it's starting, that cool factor starting to go up a little bit. And it's still not as much, right? If you're asking a ton of these kids, right, that are maybe, from the inner cities, right, whatever that be, most of them aren't going to be like, oh, yeah, I want to play golf, right? It's not like, no, I want to play football. I want to play basketball, right? Something like that. Because what is at the end of that? And this is one thing that golf is moving towards a little bit, right? They get this and they're like, okay, if I get this, I can go to college and get that paid for if I'm good. So that takes that pressure off. But then if I make it to the ultimate thing and I'm getting paid for, right? Nobody's getting really, well, I take that back. There are a few, but like the big money's not in playing golf at a college. Right now through NIL, right? What do you get when you go to basketball, football, or baseball? You get guaranteed money. What do you not get when you go to golf? You don't get guaranteed money. So there's some things that are moving to that. So it'll be interesting over the next 10 years. And you're seeing that a little bit, that demographic change with guys like Tiger playing on tour, Harold Varner, who moved to the LIV tour, right? You got in a guy like Batia, but he came from resource, man. That kid came from some resource. He can't do what he did and not come from some resources. But you got Harold Varner, you got a guy like Tony Finau that are, so there's some guys coming up that are like, oh yeah, you can do this. Right. It is possible, and you can do it for a long time. If you want. So,
but it's a great program. I'm glad they're doing that. I'm excited about like the national teams and what kind of competition that might spur. I think things that I really enjoy are like the Walker Cup and, potentially other team events that might spur from this.
Well, I mean, they already have the Walker Cup, obviously. Right. So there is you're playing for your country, but you're not playing on the national team growing up. right? You go or like Australia, they talk about the national team. Like you hear people from Sweden talk about there, right? There was national teams, there was national programs to develop players through these other countries, and the USGA finally decided to they're like, oh yeah, this would be really good for us to do and to have a developmental program just like these other countries do. And in Utah, the news, local section of this show, Zach Blair officially opens the tree farm, but I think it's right now it's to members for members to preview. Right? Not a lot of information online about it. He did his release video, which you watched. And of course, like I said, I follow him, so I've seen the progression of it. It looks like a great course. I've never right. Tom Doak, who he brought on and his team. Doak does great work, so it's there was no question, just as long as he had good land, and he obviously did if Doak was going to work with him, because Doak doesn't work on bad properties right now, right? He's very selective in the projects that he takes. So it looks cool, good sandy, ground, just a really good layout. So that's cool. But it's a place you just got to put on your bucket list because it's private and the access will be limited. Let's just say that. So,
For sure.
but now the equipment stuff, which everybody comes for, we have to hold it off to the end so they get to hear a spew about actual golf before that. No, there was a couple of things in Adam Scott. Unveiled his new Mira irons, which he just had Mira do some irons for him. Was it like 2 months ago or so? But these ones are different.
In fact, there was aesthetically they looked very similar from the
Yes.
backside. Everybody saw them, they're like, oh, these are just like the other ones he had. But they had an additional stamp that was a Japanese logo. It was kind of on the top side of the blade near the heel,
So
which I thought was nice.
from what I hear, it's Mira's the Mira that guy's
The
actual official stamp. Yeah.
Oh, so it's like if he grinds them, he stamps them with that.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's cool. So that's fine and dandy. But I got to see this iron in the plane position, and it's been a hot post. Because I have my own opinions around offset. I actually, most of my irons have zero offset right now, but I actually don't mind a little bit. But when I say a little bit, I actually mean like point. Zero
Yeah,
5 inches, which
very
I mean,
minimal.
that a half of a hundredth of an inch. But I can see it. And in fact, the most offset I'd ever want to look at is 0.08 inches. And so, but that's that sweet spot for me, right in there. But these ones have at least 0.25 inches of offset, so a quarter inch of offset on a
Yeah.
blade iron.
It's
Way
pretty
out of
big.
place.
It's pretty big.
And so I posted this thing up there, and it's been a really hot story. I've had over 2,500 views just on this thing, and people are commenting like crazy.
Do they like it? I get my guess is it's a mixed bag.
It's 99% to one that they don't like Adam Scott's offset.
Well, if you're gonna have a blade, don't like. That's why you have a blade, and maybe he likes to look at it. He is getting old, so maybe he's just looking for the little bit more forgiveness on these
Well,
seconds.
here's the reality, and a lot of people think about offset as, for one, scientifically doing something that it doesn't actually do.
Yeah.
They
Allowing you to
think
close the face.
it doesn't. It literally doesn't. It provides zero additional help in face closure. So if anybody's buying that for that reason, like just stop. Because if you're swinging a golf club at 75 miles per hour and you give yourself an extra eighth of an inch of offset, is that really, like, really work that out in your head? Is that really going to help you close the face?
No.
No, not at all. But here's the real science part. Like, what does it actually do?
Jedi mind trick.
Jedi mind
It's
trick.
a Jedi mind trick.
It does this. When you move the face behind the hosel, the CG now doesn't lie behind the face. The CG lies in front of the face because the hosel's in front of it. So
Right.
now you're moving the CG in front. Well, guess what? When you move a CG forward, what happens on a driver? You move a CG forward, you lower spin
Yeah.
and you lower launch. This is proven. You guys know that. Move the weight up. Oh, it's a bomber. Now you do that on an iron and you actually take away some of the properties that make an iron great. You launch it lower, you reduce spin, and when you reduce spin, it does have an added benefit of going less, going off direction less.
Right.
And so you technically can hit a straighter shot with an iron that spins less. But it's very minimal. But what you're sacrificing, though, is a steeper angle of descent. You're not going to hold greens as much. It's just going to make golf a little bit tougher. And nobody's really saying that, but people are looking at it and go, oh, go straighter. But yeah, I do find myself off the back of the green 99% of the time.
Which is why you now play a seven through a utility or gap wedge
Right,
to get the same
right.
effect.
And so it is a really interesting. Now, if you are a high spin player, you can actually benefit from putting offset in your irons so you can take off some of that spin. But it ain't going to help you square up the face. And some of the most offset irons out there were played by players that hit fades, and Adam Scott's one of those guys, and they still
Right.
fading it. Freddie Couples still fading it. So, it's pretty funny. No, nobody really knows that, but it's definitely working against players' abilities to hold greens, and it's a racket.
Yeah, like I said, that's what, but yeah, I don't know. I've never really liked the big offset, so I don't have to worry about that so much. Another cool, like one-off proto, not a prototype, just one-off things. Daniel King got a one-off. He actually. In the things, it looks like he designed two putters for her to actually look at. And it's definitely, well, I wouldn't say that because I guess the like the X5 or something was very similar to it. Was it the X5 or I can't remember which one. It was like the solid body mallet that came out, but this one's more, yeah, it was definitely a little different than anything he's done in the
Yeah,
past for tour players.
this particular putter is very unique. I've only ever seen Scotty make the exact putter he gave Daniel or Danielle for himself. In fact, the two that I specifically remember were some red and blue crocodile leather inlay on the backside of this circular half moon mallet. And those came out a long time ago, but it happens to be the putter that she gravitated towards. So if you were to consider like
Were
a
they very were they similar to that? Were they weren't like necessarily the putter that keeps coming to mind is like the Tuttle, right? That rounded back putter, which was I think it was the X Red, maybe is what it was called.
yeah, it would be very similar to that in some regard, but it's just solid. It's a pure, clean, solid look to it.
Well, yeah,
And
cause, and it goes back. It's more like I think Tad Moore had a putter like that where it was the full back, so it didn't have your you're cut out, right? It just kind of goes back in that downward motion. So it's not necessarily the Tuttle or anything like that. It was definitely a different design.
It's almost like you took an 8802 and you took the lower flange and just stretched it back.
Yeah, moved it back. Yeah.
Because it has that drop off, a gradual drop off, like a ramp that goes all the way down. And it's just a half circle. It's by far one of the most simple putters I've ever seen. I'd say aesthetically, from a simplistic standpoint, it reminds me a lot of what John Rahm has done with his Rossi, where he took all the lines off and everything. And that's really what you're looking at with hers. And she got two models. She got one that was a much more compact half moon, so not so half moony, and then one that truly was a half moon.
Yeah.
And they have some varied offset built into the neck, one probably being a full shaft and the other one being a half shaft, but super clean looking putters. And yeah, I mean, that's the dream, right? Go to Scotty Cameron's studio, not the gallery, but the studio.
Yeah, his actual studio.
And then you've got a pretty amazing experience where he's gonna make a putter for you right in front of you.
Yeah, so I think she said it was a block of steel with some drawings on it, and then I came back and it was what it was, and then they made some other changes. And Yeah. Like, really, really cool.
That's the dream. If I were to say the holy grail of like golf club experiences, it's go to the studio, have a fitting session, and then have Scotty pick out a block of steel and literally CNC the putter just for you. Like, that to me is the crown jewel.
Yeah, that would be. Wouldn't be so bad, for sure. Now to, just the winner of the Arnold Palmer Invitational. What's in his bag? Seems kind of like small beans after this, what we just discussed.
Yep. Super small beans. But yeah, I mean, let's run through it. And he's a TaylorMade staffer, so let's see if anything pops out. But hey, it was the Stealth 2, Stealth 2 Plus as a driver, and then Stealth 2 3-wood and 7-wood. And we've seen this combo. It's not going away. 16.5 degree, which is essentially a 4-wood, and then a 21 degree, which is your 7-wood. So, man, it's just the winning combo as of late. We see it every single week.
Gosh, like they have a high lofted firewood in their bag. It's not going away.
Yeah, so really cool, and that's something I want to replicate for sure. And then from an irons perspective, he's got a nice combo set between the P7 MCs and the P7 MBs, just what you'd expect there. Dynamic Gold Tour issue X1s, and then he's got the MG3 52 and 56, but then he's got the black sheep in the bag, the Vokey Design SM9.
Yes, and that is the Justin Timus K grind. The K grind JT edition, where he adds a little bit of back end relief and leading edge relief. So he's got trailing edge relief and leading edge relief
on the
thing. So a little bit more of a low bounce K. I think they had it at 6 is what it ended up being stamped at, 6 degrees of bounce, which is lower, but still not quite as exaggerated as the T grind.
Yeah, it's going to sit really low. But yeah, it and the story is that JT was hanging out with T-Dub and he got to try out his wedges and liked some of the features and had some of that worked into a wedge for of Oki, and so JT really was the first one to utilize this grind, but it's floated around. I think Rory McIlroy was rocking one in his win or his last victory, and it's just been popping up more and more. It's pretty cool. So it's a good
Yeah.
grind. It's effective, it's versatile. So
It's got a,
that's
like I said, it's got a very, not quite a D grain feel, just because the shape and the actual back sole is so much wider
Oh
than
yeah.
that. But right, they've kind of tapered that, so it still sits low, but you get the benefit of having that wider sole on there at the same time. But yeah,
Oh, absolutely.
that's kind of his bag. Like say, nothing crazy. He does have the new Torii D 80UB in there, which is a newer model, but everything is like, oh, I can get all new stuff. Yep, doing it. Right, he went down the line. Yep, stealth two. Yep, stealth two. Stealth two. So he's right, and my guess is with his contract coming into it, they're like, yeah, you need to have the new stuff in your bag. We're giving it to you. We're paying you a little bit. You need to have the new stuff in your bag. Next year, that might not necessarily be the case if he keeps playing as well as he is. So, but I think that's end of it. We got the players this
Sweet.
week with no defending champion.
No, poor Cam Smith.
I don't know if you say poor Cam Smith at this point. But I think it's not a good look, right? For the PGA Tour, and it was so apparent that they weren't even going to mention. They pretended like last year didn't happen. Basically, you had they basically just regurgitated the marketing from the year before. I mean, it saved them money. All they had to do was, oh, we don't have to do anything. Except for change it a little bit. Do we need to change the date? That's it. But everything else was coming from 2021, right? Justin Thomas and him talking about his thing. So it was exactly the same as the year before. So they saved money on that, but lost a past champion without the tournament being canceled. Or the player being out an injury, which is a really weird thing. Really weird thing. And I think he said it. I just scrolling through Instagram, and it just has a quote, and I haven't been able to listen to it because I'm obviously not going to play it while we're recording. But it's his quote was, "That's awkward," or "It's awkward." So, yes, it is. You're right, sir. But other than that, I think that's it. Everybody, thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. And until next time, where do we? We're out.